to Conversations That Count with me, Rob Brown, and on behalf of Business Building for Bankers, I'm delighted to have with me today the author of the book Brilliant Influence, Mr. Mike Clayton. Hello, Mike.
Good morning, Rob.
Mike, it's great to have you with us. And for the benefit of those people listening that don't know too much about you, would you tell us a bit about your background and your expertise?
Yes, certainly, Rob. My background originally is in academic research, but left that to go into management consultancy, working with initially a small niche consultancy and then with Touche Ross, which later became Deloitte and Deloitte Consulting. Spent about 12 years working on the management of large-scale projects, both in the public sector and the private sector. I suppose my biggest clients were people like BAA, PLC, Transport for London, General Motors and Vodafone. I did do one project in the banking sector, but unfortunately, due to the terms of that project, I'm unable to say any more about it, Rob.
Confidentiality and all that.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of your listeners were going to understand that one very well.
Well, I know that you coach and train across a lot of industries, and in many ways that's beneficial for bankers to hear because we bring those skills from the sectors into the banking world. We're going to talk about influence today, and how important would you say it is for banking professionals to know about influence and be good at it, Mike?
I'd say it's essential. Like any industry where people relationships between people are essential, influence is going to be one of your key skills. And I think there are three primary areas where banking professionals are going to need to use their influencing skills. Sales, obviously, if you're actually in a part of the banking sector where you are selling to clients, then being able to influence them to buy your products and services is going to be key. Working effectively with colleagues is another area. Banking is one of those industries, I think, where the kind of network of relationships that you hold and your ability to influence people across that network is going to be key. And finally, and I think this is one that's often overlooked, if you as an individual want to be seen as a serious prospect for advancement in your career, whether that's promotion or getting different opportunities to learn new things and to demonstrate new skills, then being able to influence the people around you will not only help you get that advancement, but will also show you as being a person who your organization will want to advance.
There are three terrific areas in my book on reputation, and talking about becoming the go-to professional in a crowded marketplace. You're absolutely right in engaging stakeholders, getting people to yes, and building strong influence internally and externally. So you're right on the message there, Mike. Tell us, just definition of terms, if we looked up the word influence in the Mike Clayton dictionary, what might we come up with?
I suppose influence is your ability to get people to think in a way that is consistent with your way of thinking. What I am keen to avoid is the feeling that there are guarantees around influence. There are techniques and magic bullets, if you like, that will get you people to line up behind you and do exactly as you tell them to. Even the great stage hypnotists know that there is a percentage of people who are going to be willing and the percentage of people who aren't. But for me, influence is about changing the odds. It's about getting people to be more likely to accept your proposition, whether it's a request to do something for them, to buy services from them, or to help them out in some way.
And I suppose you're talking about sales, but anyone in a management or leadership position, they've still got to sell their ideas, their vision, their excuses, their objectives, haven't they? They've got to sell that to the team.
Absolutely. And I think knowing a range of techniques to convince people of that what you're saying and the ideas that you're putting forward are correct gives you that edge in any management or leadership role.
So you've worked across banking and other sectors as well. How well understood do you think influence is?
I think the basics are very well understood. I think if you ask people, how do you influence people, other people, you'll get some really good answers. And the sort of things that people will talk about is through good, logical, rational thinking. and the ability to articulate an argument well, that kind of analytical approach. People know also that attitudes influence people around us. So if we take a positive attitude, that will rub off. And also we know that nothing influences quite so well as the actions that we take. And I think the second thing I'd say is that as children, we learn some really good basic techniques. So influence at a basic level is very well understood. My concern now is that few people advance much beyond what they learn in their school career. We don't actually learn influencing skills at school as a discipline or at university or at college, by and large. So what we take with us as we enter the world of work is very often the same influencing techniques that we used in the playground and with our parents. That is rarely enough.
So you talk about children being good at influencing. Can I ask, do you think good influencers are born or made?
I think we're all born great influencers. You know, the ability for a baby to attract its parents' attention and to get them to come to it is phenomenal. And as we, I've got a 2.5-year-old, and her ability to get us to do things as her parents is amazing.
Yeah.
But whether we develop these skills, that's down partly to our upbringing, partly to the opportunities that we have or we create, and partly about our desire to study influence. And I think we can all become great influencers by studying what works, by trying it out, and then by honing our skills down to a finer and finer level. And there's an awful lot that we can do to take the what's born into us and make it into an even more powerful skill set.
So what you're saying is this stuff is coachable?
Absolutely. It's coachable, it's learnable, it's studyable. If I didn't believe that, there would be no point in writing a book which said to people, you know, there is some great influence out there, but sorry, if you haven't got it, you haven't got it. I don't think there's very much in life that's like that. Yes, if you're not 6'7", you're never going to be a great basketball star. But beyond things like that, everything I think is learnable, and influence is definitely that. And as we go through some of the other questions I'm sure you've got waiting for me, Rob, we could perhaps uncover some of the techniques that people can use.
Well, hang on a minute. There's a bit of a paradox here. If you're saying that the upsides of being more influential are huge, and if you're saying that it's coachable and everyone can do it, why isn't everyone doing it?
that really is a paradox. I suppose partly because we kind of believe that we're good at influencing. We notice the results. And partly because when things go wrong, we tend to lay the blame. One of the words you used earlier, Rob, when you talked about why influencing would be useful, is to get people to believe our excuses. And I think excuses is a problem word for me. And as a coach, I'm sure you're also aware that excuses are not very much use to anybody. There's no responsibility in an excuse. Yet when we fail to influence somebody, we look for excuses. We say, well, they weren't prepared to listen. They didn't understand what I'm saying. When we make the decision to take responsibility for the communication we put out in the world, that's when we start to study what does work and what doesn't work. And when things don't work, we try to understand the reasons for it and find an alternative. And so the answer, I think, to your paradox is people are too content with what they get, or putting it a slightly more emotive way, perhaps too lazy to go looking for something new.
Yeah, I think that might be a little bit of it. People want quick wins and instant gratification, and if they can't find something that works immediately, they're not perhaps not prepared to be a little bit more diligent and putting in the effort to become a great influencer.
That's absolutely right. The instant gratification thing, I think you put your finger right on it. There are a lot of books out there which will tell you that they've got a system, whether it's for influencing or for time management or for anything, any business-related or life-related skill. And the people who buy those are desperate. But they haven't realised that actually if it really matters to you, then you need to take time. There are no instant answers to human skills like influencing one another, because there are an infinite number of people and therefore an infinite number of techniques that you need to deploy to guarantee you success.
So we'll dip into some of these techniques you're talking about in just a moment, but how much has influence changed over the years?
Again, this is a question, I suppose, that has two halves to the answer. On the one hand, human beings are human beings, and we haven't changed for all of recorded history and probably many, many tens of thousands of years before that. So human psychology hasn't changed, and therefore the techniques that will work haven't changed. But what has changed, I think, is the extent to which psychologists and social scientists and neuroscientists have been exploring and rigorously testing the responses that we make, and they've been documenting those. And I suppose that started probably in about the 1950s. It took off in earnest in the 1970s. But the big change has come, I suppose, in the last 5 to 10 years, and that's the hugely growing power of neuroscience to image the brain and to design experiments that will give us reliable understanding and insights into how our brain works. So scientists are gradually giving us not just anecdotes and stories and experience, but they're giving us a really deep understanding of why some influencing techniques work, which allow us to hone those techniques to a level which has never been possible before in a systematic way.
So for now, in a much better position than ever before to know what works and what doesn't. Tell us, what do the great influencers do or know that the others don't?
I think fundamentally, it's about control. It's about controlling the process of influence. What the great influencers do is they bring together all of the different elements, their personality, their appearance. You know, we all know that we have one chance to make a first impression, so they use that. They use their ability to build a rapport, to listen carefully and understand what people are saying to them, and to speak in a way that people understand. And they use their negotiating skills. They use their ability to build networks. And to that, of course, we've got the new thing, the understanding of psychology. And I think great influences, they control all of those processes together rather than trying to rely on one thing, one kind of shallow silver bullet or some sort of snake oil. So great influences know that there's no guarantees, but that by bringing together all of these things, they're stacking the odds. They're cumulatively giving themselves an edge.
The way you're talking, it seems like there's a lot of things in life that are basically a negotiation process that you can stack in your favour to bring about the outcome you desire.
Absolutely. Everything's a negotiation, whether it's deciding what you're going to do this afternoon with the family, and everyone's got their own point of view, to deciding how much you're going to charge for a product or a service in the banking sector. And just like any negotiation, each stage has to be put together to create an effective outcome, starting with a preparation, understanding the people you're dealing with, negotiating with, right the way through to closing the deal.
Is it possible, Mike, that some people are more influenceable than others, if that's a word?
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's not just some people, it's some contexts as well. In some contexts, you are going to be much more open to influence than in other contexts. When you're hungry, when you're thirsty, then it's going to be very easy to sell you a drink. One of the oldest techniques in the book is to promote products by showing you creating in you a sense of desire for that product, and instantly you become very susceptible. So building up susceptibility, and some people I guess have a personality which wants that, but I think it's better to talk about context rather than people, because I may be very easy to influence in one context and a lot harder to influence in another. Give me 5 minutes to browse Amazon, and it'll be very easy to get me to buy a book. Yeah. But if you take me to a clothes shop, I could take hours, and it would be very hard to get me to commit to a new suit.
Yeah. So what you're saying here is that one of the key influencing techniques is to bring about that state of mind or that context that makes people want to buy or do what you want them to do.
It is, and it's also about understanding that person, understanding what their desires and wants are. The easiest way to influence somebody is to ask them to do something that they already want to do, or ask them to buy something that they already want. So if you understand me well enough, then you can frame your request, whether it's for a favour or for me to buy something from you, in the terms that actually I'm going to want to say yes.
Yeah.
So great influencers know how to read people.
I heard a great phrase once, you know, the old adage, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Yeah.
But then someone added on the end, but you can if you salt the oats.
Absolutely. Years ago, advertising regulators banned subliminal advertising. And one of the commonest things that used to happen in movie theatres was, well, which still, I mean, one of the things that still happens, obviously, is heavily salted crisps make you want to buy drinks. But in the old days, they also used to kind of flash up images of cold drinks and food subliminally, so that you, as soon as you start to think about food that you might like, your mouth starts to water and you start to feel hungry, even though you don't actually need that food. So it wouldn't take very much for me to get some of your listeners to get their mouth watering. All I have to do is to start talking about that juicy orange that I've got in my hand, and the fact that when I cut into it, the juices are running down my arm, and I'm just kind of bringing it to my lips, ready to take a bite from it. If your listeners are thinking through that process for themselves, they'll start to salivate.
Yeah.
Now they want to drink, and yet a moment ago it wasn't even in their mind.
Yeah. So if we look at those three scenarios you mentioned at the top of the call, first was getting customers and clients, prospects, to buy or switch banks. The second was becoming a better prospect for promotions. And the third was better customer service, you know, serving people and stakeholders better. Can you give us a few bits of advice or techniques, Mike, that can help us raise our game in those areas?
Yeah, I think the first thing I'd suggest is build your credibility. Whether you're selling to in a retail situation or in a commercial situation, the people who are going to be buying from you are going to want to buy from someone who they readily believe is an expert. It's also true that that's going to help you with your advancement and building respect from your colleagues. There's a principle in my book called the your doctor would tell you to principle, because we tend to do what our doctors tell you to, and we do that because they know our doctors are highly trained, highly skilled individuals. If you can portray yourself as someone who is highly skilled, highly trained, and an expert, then people are going to respect your opinions and advice, and they're going to take your advice and act on it, whether it's advice to buy a product and you're recommending which is the better of the products that your institution sells, or whether it's a colleague involved in a project internally. So there are a number of things you can do to build your credibility. For example, just start off by looking the part. Look at like someone who really knows what they're talking about. A few years ago, there was a trend for dressing down across the sectors. The banking industry was one that resisted it to a greater degree than others, and I think rightly so. I think we now know that if you want people to respect you as an expert selling a very high value product or delivering high value services in your sector, then you have to look the part. And I always say, always dress a half a notch above your peer group. If you dress the level of your peer group, you're just one of the crowd. If you dress a half a notch above, then you're starting to look a little bit different, a little bit better, a little bit more credible. If you dress a whole notch above, then someone's going to say, doesn't she or he think himself a bit too special? So look the part. Secondly, make sure you really do know what you're talking about. It's very easy to crash and burn and portray yourself as an expert when you're not. So there's no alternative to doing your homework. And finally, use your network. Your listeners' client bases can create a trail of testimonials and references and endorsements that would tell me, if I were buying banking services, if I don't know them, that these are people whose judgment I can trust, whose expertise I can rely on. So credibility would be my first piece of advice. My second would be to be prepared to give generously. A lot of what you and I do, Rob, is to give people free information and ideas and resources. We do favours for friends and colleagues and potential clients. What this does is earn us credits. It's kind of like a bank of favours, really, where, you know, we do favours for people, and they are likely in return to respect that and want to return the favour. If your listeners can find more ways to do this, not with the expectation that one favour or contribution will have any particular effect, but knowing that overall they're going to kind of harvest a return from a series of favours, that's going to be the second piece of advice. It's in financial terms, I suppose, it's a bit like investing in a broad portfolio. Bankers know that if they invest in a broad portfolio, some investments will succeed and others will fail.
Right.
But overall, if that portfolio is well managed, it's the portfolio itself that will prosper in just about any market conditions.
Yeah, and I guess it induces some kind of obligation as well, doesn't it? People want to return that favour.
It does. Tit for tat or reciprocation is perhaps one of the most powerful instincts we all have. Yeah. And many of your listeners will know that have had an experience of exchanging gifts at Christmas or something like that, where they felt that the gift that they've received from someone far outweighs the gift that they've given, and they will feel a sense of discomfort with that and wanting to repay it. And this works at so many different levels. It's a hugely valuable part of what networking and why networking works and what business is all about. I guess my third one would be learn how to hone your spoken and written presentation. I think words can have tremendous power if you make them compelling. And too often I hear real experts struggle to make their message clear. And I think banking is one of those areas where you're dealing as bankers with people who have a lot less expertise than you do.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of complicated financial instruments. There are a lot of technical terms. And there's a temptation to show your expertise by using as many of those technical terms and as much of that complex language as you can. The problem is, if I don't understand you, and yet I'm confident of my own position because I am a senior executive at an equivalent level to you, if I don't understand you, then I'm not going to think you're clever and I'm stupid. I'm going to think, can I really trust you?
Mm.
So take time to think about how you can express your ideas in a way that simplifies them so that I can really easily understand you. That way, I will trust you. And I will know, because you've explained it clearly, that you must really understand it. I'm not going to instantly think, just because you haven't used technical terms, that you don't know them. I'm going to think, because you haven't used the technical terms, but you've explained it clearly, I understand it. Therefore, I'm confident to buy from you.
Yeah. If people want to get in touch with you or learn a little bit more about Mike Clayton, the books you write, the stuff you do for people, how might they reach you?
The easiest way is just to go to mikeclayton.co.uk. That's my umbrella website. If they're particularly interested in any of my books, such as Brilliant Influence, there are links to microsites for each of those books, where for many of them I've got a blog with lots of additional information and ideas coming through. If they want to contact me by phone, they're very welcome to do so. 0845 644 1349, or they can email me at mike@mikeclayton.co.uk, and I'd be delighted to enter into a conversation with any of your listeners.
That's terrific. Thank you, Mike. And just finish off then for us with a motivating rally call. Put influence into a couple of sentences for us banking professionals listening.
In a couple of sentences, I'd say this. Firstly, there are people out there who get more of what they want, more of what they need, and they get it more easily. Those are the people that have understood the fundamentals of influencing brilliantly. And they do that by listening to the people they're trying to influence and by deploying a whole range of skills. If you study this stuff, if you take your time, then you'll understand that there are so many different tactics that you can deploy, that you can raise your odds each one cumulatively giving you a greater and greater edge. And that's what brilliant influence is about. And I think for your listeners, that's going to be one of the most valuable skills that they can learn and develop as they go through their careers.
Mike Clayton, that's been terrific. Thank you so much for your time today.
You're very welcome, Rob. Thank you very much for the opportunity.